E-commerce merchants, does consistent monthly growth while hitting ROI goals sound good? Here at Adroll, our customers constantly let us know it feels good. Adroll helps you attract new customers and bring shoppers back to finish the sale. Integrate your e-commerce store with Adroll and manage display, social media, and native advertising all in one place. Sounds good, right? See the difference. Visit Adroll.com to get started today.
Industry-leading, difference-making, tomorrow-shaping, world-changing. These are a few of the adjectives people use to describe the technologies and companies Deloitte works with day in and day out. Join us, and soon those very same adjectives could describe your career too. Explore technology careers at Deloitte.com/tech careers and make an impact on business, technology, and society while engineering your future. At Deloitte.
What up, brother? How you doing?
Oh,
I feel like a lumberjack today. What's going on?
I feel like a damn lumberjack today. It snowed in Michigan today.
Ooh.
I'm sure everybody else has already talked about it, but dear God, I'm over this. Come on, spring.
Y'all, welcome to Cannabis Hour. We've been with you all week at Cannabis Insider, but Thursdays are when we get to talk to the executives and CEOs every week. Aaron, who do we have this week?
I mean, come on.
Pumped.
It's been a second since I was on Cannabis Hour. And I got to say, that video is badass.
I love it. I'm not getting the YouTube chat on my normal sidebar here. So
I don't have it either.
I'll pull it up here in a second. But everybody, welcome. We're thrilled to have you. We're talking about cannabis stocks. Drop some ones in the chat. I need to pull up this show so I can see what you peeps are saying.
While we're pulling it up, we're getting the chat
perfect.
Up.
Perfect. Can you hear me?
Running. I can hear you.
Okay. All right. There we go. All right. So I see the chat. We are up and running. All right. So today's a fun show, but y'all drop a one in the chat. We're going to talk about stocks. Patrick, it's been a while since you and I have chatted directly. I think like a week or so here. What are some fun things you're seeing in the industry right now?
A ton, you guys. Listen, I've been bullish on Nick Kovacevich and Kushko Holdings for a while now, right? They paid off $17 million in debt. I shouted them out earlier this week. And lo and behold, a merger with Green Lane Holdings, right?
There it is.
And I'm excited for those guys, right? I really am. I think it's really cool to see what each of them have done and what they've built in the space. Again, Nick's been around for a long time with Kushko, so I'm happy for him to sort of take that next step. And Green Lane.
Well, I feel like Green Lane. Yeah, well, I'm a big Green Lane fan. I mean, they are a brand builder. I mean, they really have made a name in this industry. So I think this is really the combination of two powerhouses. I just have one request to them. They must include the name Lane in whatever they are doing next. That is my demand.
I agree with that demand.
Y'all, let's keep an eye on this one, though. I think this is a huge merger here. We knew it was going to be a big year of M&As. I didn't see this one coming, but you know, Nick and the Green Lane team obviously doing some big things over there. I saw an article today, Patrick, about stocks to watch on the cannabis side in a market crash. What is your insight on this? This was Benzinga contributor. It was GTI, GTBIF, everybody, GTI. It was Fire and Flower, and it was GW Pharma. I love the Fire and Flower one.
Right.
But is that the one to grab in a crash?
Okay. No, I don't think so. I like Fire and Flower a lot. I think that they have some really interesting, they've got a great narrative, and I think that they've got a good footprint. But is that the stock that I grab in a
crash? Yeah, that's my thought too. I mean, they're huge. They are the retail, online retail platform in Canada. They'll be in the U.S. Their Hi-Fi platform, I think they're partnering with Koza Software. Is that it? Who is huge here?
Yep.
So, I mean, they will be around. Don't get me wrong. I think well worth an investment here. And just so you all have that ticker, Fire and Flower, if I could pull it up. It starts with an F. I'll give you that.
There you go. Listen, while you're pulling that up, here's you're going to talk about stocks, right? Yeah. And stocks that you might grab if you're you could say crash, whatever. I mean, let's talk about any number of scenarios here. Let's look at those companies who are making news and expanding the footprint into key markets, right? Parallel, an MSO, they have a deal with the Ceres Acquisition Corp SPAC. I believe it's CERAF on the OTCQX, mm-hmm. CERAF. Parallel, run by Bo Wrigley,
yeah,
of the Wrigley Gum family, right? They probably know how to do some CPG. What do you think?
Right? I would think so. And just everybody, the stock I was talking about, high value play, I think, FFLWF. But it's not like my first go-to, to our point there. But in any case, I agree. The Ceres Holdings SPAC is a great one. Parent company.
Parent company is cool.
You know, being subversive via Subversive Acquisition Corp. Another great one. I mean, there's so many. I mean, just, you know, we continue to look at Trulieve. I feel like once or twice a week over here.
We might as well. But let's look at one. Let's look at VRNO. That's at least I think
Verano?
That's VRNO. They just picked up three Pennsylvania dispensaries, that's medical, right. About 110 mil. They're going to spend there. They are a company that's moving rapidly. I think the news last week was that they added more to their Arizona footprint, right? Because they already have a footprint there, and they've been moving super super fast. I mean, they literally just went public. Like via IPO, what, January or mm-hmm. something? Seeing some of these deals come through, it's really exciting to me, right? And we're starting to see some of these, maybe not the top MSOs, the MSOs that you're not talking about every day, your Parallel, your Verano, they've been in our Rolodex for a while, but maybe they haven't been the Trulieve, the GTI, the Cresco, the right. Curaleaf status. You're going to start to see some real jockeying here. Which are the companies that have footprint in New York and Florida?
I'll tell you that one. Yeah, I'll tell you one who's had a good couple of days. And listen, they've all had a good couple of days. I mean, Columbia Care is one that sticks out to me. And when you look at the New York market, Javi and I talked about this yesterday, but the incumbents will rule market. So anybody who comes in now is not going to be able to have the margins and the revenue growth that the people that are there now will have. So you look at a Columbia Care, you look at a Terrasen, you look at any of these other New York operators.
You know who it is. It's GTI.
It's GTBIF,
right?
GTBIF. I mean, so that one, you should definitely buy the crash, my goodness. I mean, we're not advisors here. This is our opinion. But GTBIF is just a solid play whatever day we're talking about it. Yeah. They are a leader. Ben is doing an incredible job.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the news out of New York with the Senate legalizing mm-hmm. adult use, right? Not federal Senate, by the way, the New York State Senate.
Right.
GTBIF, Ben Kobler was quoted saying, you know, we have a lot of a belief in this market. Obviously, New York is the epicenter of the financial world. Some might dispute that who are overseas, but as far as the Americans are concerned,
let them dispute.
It is what it is, right? but New York, you know, they got some stuff going on in New York.
Oh,
they've got a lot happening. So to have a dispensary in Manhattan in what is poised to be maybe a $5 billion market, come on.
Well, and one of the reasons being when you're talking about dispensaries, it's that the companies that are there now, all of them, all the major ones have four dispensaries apiece. They are going to be able to double their footprint to 8. No other company coming in, if I can remember this correctly, will be allowed to have more than 3.
Oh, sorry, guys. That sucks.
Like, I mean, you missed your shot. I think revenue potential growth is like 120% for those that are already there. Max for those that move in is less than 40%.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'll take the 40%. But
geez, of course. Don't get me wrong.
It's nice to be one of the big boys. That's for sure.
I was going to say, this is a long-winded way. Acreage has had a good week.
They have had a good week.
They are, let's see, looking at, oh no, what happened to my watch list? Oh, there we go. Okay, sorry. I had to pull my watch list back up. Acreage Holdings, this is ACRHF. They're up 5% today. You know, so that's still, you know, coming off the news of yesterday of New York.
And you expect some of that, right? Some of these companies in that market are definitely going to bounce. Acreage also made some choices, right? Some tough choices. Mm-hmm. And it's tough to say this because you rewind maybe a year or two ago, and we all remember the news of, you know, Canopy investing a couple bill in Acreage, right? After receiving a couple billion from Constellation, right? And then everything kind of went to shit, right? You've got the market turned down. You've got, you know, just people trying to expand beyond the footprint that was possible to maintain, right? And Acreage got cut up in that. And recently had to purge again several employees from their payroll. So maybe they're leaning out their CapEx. Maybe they're pushing forward, and we're going to see them bounce back. I'll tell you what, I believe in Acreage before I believe in MedMen. I'm still pretty bearish on MedMen. I believe it's MMNFF, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe you're right there. Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, you look at these companies in the Northeast. I mean, the growth potential that of the ones that are there is just magnanimous compared to those that could move into there in the near future. And, you know, again, I think I shout them out every time I'm on. Air Wellness continues to just steamroll this country with acquisitions. 400 million, not 400 million. Sorry, that was the Ohio. That was the Ohio medical market was 400 million. They made an acquisition in Ohio. That's where my brain took me. They just bought into Ohio with, I think, a sub $20 million acquisition. So Arizona, New Jersey, and Ohio on their menu the past couple weeks. That's AYRW. Thank you, Aaron. Already up there. AYRWF. Awesome. So tons of news this week. I think tons more to come. But, you know, I love Thursdays because we get to hear from the industry veterans themselves. I think today's conversations are super interesting. They're not necessarily going to be directed at the news of the day, but I think they're two companies that have been through tons in this industry. They've been around a while. And I'm excited to hear their perspectives and where they see 2021 going for them and what we can do. So we're going to start off with the CEO of MassRoots. They are OTC listed MSRT. We have Isaac Dietrich here with us. Isaac, there you are, my friend. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Doing well, man. It's been a year. It's been a fun year, but a busy year.
It's been
a bit crazy. So Isaac, let's turn it over to you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about MassRoots, a little bit about yourself for the audience?
Sure. So MassRoots was started back in 2013 as a technology platform, a social network for the cannabis industry. And we enable cannabis consumers to find the best products, connect with other consumers. And we also have a media component in which we deliver content that we aim to both inform and delight our audience. We have a very wide following on Instagram, on YouTube. MassRoots, you can search on any major platform and see our pages there. But we recently announced an acquisition, Herbfluence, which enables cannabis brands to easily use cannabis content influencers to market their products and services. So if those of you who are not familiar with influencer marketing, basically brands hire these social media accounts, these social media influencers that have a wide following in order to get an audience, in order to have another channel in which to sell their products. And before, brands had to go out to each influencer individually, reach out, negotiate the terms and rates. And then there's almost no reference system to see if they did a good job for other businesses. So Herbfluence makes that entire process much more streamlined. Brands can just go on there, see which influencers work best for other companies, and easily schedule posts with those influencers and analyze the results, leave reviews. So we feel that it's a great way for cannabis brands to have a cost-effective way to reach their audience, because most of them can't advertise via Facebook ads or Instagram ads or Twitter ads or Google ads because they ban all cannabis-related advertising. So we think that this is a great way for investors to have a play on the entire industry without touching the plan itself. It's not dependent on a single market, even though we're incredibly encouraged about New Mexico and New York. But this is a play on the entire industry that's not leveraged to a specific company, a specific brand, a specific market. And we feel it's a play on the entire industry without ever touching the plan itself.
That's really cool. Cool. Why New Mexico? I'm curious. I know we saw the news, or we talked about the news yesterday on Canvas Insider about them looking to open up. But I'm curious, why New Mexico specifically?
Well, yeah, I just mentioned it because it was in the news. But I mean, honestly, most of our revenue still comes from Colorado and California. That's where most of our audience is. That's where most of our users are. We're excited to expand into New York and these other markets. They're topical, which is why I mention it. But I mean, to be honest, still our favorite market out there is Colorado. It's the most mature. You now have very seasoned executives, very knowledgeable operators coming in. And we enjoy working with those people much more than the people that were around, you know, 5-10 years ago, even though we love them too.
Call them out. Call them out, Isaac.
Do what you got to do, man. Yeah. So Isaac, let me jump in here. When it comes to influencer marketing, and what that means for, let's say, shareholders or interested parties in Massroots, right? What does it mean for your company specifically, and how the trajectory is shifting? I mean, you guys are, you know, obviously you've been through some struggles. You're bouncing back. You know, I read an article that you guys are going to be the greatest comeback story in the history of cannabis, and obviously, I want to be one of those guys rooting for you. So when that happens, what will have been the catalyst? Let's say the Herbfluence influencer marketing strategy works. What will the catalyst have been to bring you guys full circle?
Well, Herbfluence gives us revenue, sustainable revenue. I think a great business model that's high margin, that's very scalable, with minimal marginal cost. So, we have had a very storied past, and part of that was we raised $35 million, and much like other companies in the space, we increased our monthly expenses. We had a large staff. I think at one point we had 40 people on our payroll, and we incurred debt to sustain those operations. So over the past year, we've really focused on restructuring our company, cutting as much expenses as possible. Our monthly expenses are now less than $50,000 per month. We focused on knocking out as much of this convertible debt as possible. And now with this Herbfluence deal, we're adding in the revenue that that obviously is crucial to any business. But our goal is to get to cash flow positive from operations. And we believe that will set us apart from nearly every other company in the space. We don't want to be reliant on financings and dilution and diluting our shareholders in order to continue to operate. So right now, our market capitalization is around $10 million, which makes us one of the most inexpensive companies in the cannabis space. At the same time, we have a very large reach, a very large audience, and we feel everything that we need in order to take the company to the next level and build sustainable shareholder value based on real fundamentals, which is generating more revenue than your expenses.
I hear that. I hear that's a good thing. Yeah. No, but that's, I think that's interesting, right? And, you've had your share of bad rap here, right? In terms of having to take on, you know, some of that black hat wearing stuff in this industry. And it's in, I think some of it's unfair, to be honest with you, right? And that's just my personal opinion, mm-hmm. right? But I think a lot of cannabis companies went through some shit there, especially in 18 and 19, when the market was down and everybody did what they could to survive. And, you know, I am interested to know, or see rather, this trajectory come full circle for you. So let me take this a step further. You talk about revenue being the catalyst, right? And that being the thing that pushes you guys back to, you know, cash flow positive, and you're a real interesting investment opportunity in the space. Give us a sense of timing, right, of the Herbfluence deal and sort of what your trajectory is back to seeing some of that revenue.
So the Herbfluence deal will be closing within the next 2 weeks. We feel that revenue will start to be reflected in the second quarter of this year. Our expenses, we started that process last year, so it's nearly complete.
Awesome.
And you're really going to see, I believe, a strengthening of our balance sheet over the next, over the next few filings. And we really want to tell our story through our filings and our fundamentals rather than, just speculation. I apologize about the phone.
That's right. The investors are calling already, man.
Yeah, I love it.
It's a busy time in the space.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, as Massroots, I mean, you know, you have that B2B aspect where brands can, you know, market via social through this Herbfluence platform. But you also, you provide the ability for consumers to give their feedback in a very real way, affect the market, if you will, affect these companies. And at least that's the idea, if I'm not mistaken, is to really provide the consumer feedback and reviews. So I'm curious, you know, where does that take place in this kind of looking forward? Because I know that that was originally, I think, the main idea, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so we want to enable consumers to find the best products and through consumer-generated reviews. So this product works good for headaches. This particular cream works good for back pain, and then present this information in easy to use, actionable formats for everyday consumers to make their cannabis purchasing decisions. We invested a lot of money in developing that platform, millions, if not tens of millions of dollars. And that is still our long-term goal. If you look at other industries such as wine, Vivino is a great platform where consumers can review the best wines, see what stores have them in stock, and easily purchase the product. That's where we want to go eventually, but that's going to take a significant amount of investment. And in the short term, we want to get to cash flow positive from influencer marketing, from these other initiatives, so that when we do, eventually get back into our long-term vision, we're utilizing the cash flows from operations rather than simply relying on investment in order to build out those platforms. But you're right. I right now, I think for this industry to continue to grow, you need to enable mainstream consumers, people who haven't consumed cannabis before. One of the greatest problems facing the industry is, you know, first-time consumers take a bunch of edibles, they have a horrible experience and are completely turned off by the entire industry. If you can find a way to most reliably and most consistently deliver recommendations to consumers that ensure they have a good experience and experience the effects that they're looking for, we feel that that's a massive opportunity that very few companies are focused on. And again, it is applicable to every MSO, every licensed producer, everyone in the space. It's just an industry-wide problem that we would very much like to solve.
Education. It all comes back to education. Whenever we talk to a new company, we're providing education to the markets, and it's much needed. So I hear you there. I'm curious what types of influencers you all are reaching. Is there a specific standard for the types of Herbfluence influencers that you all support offer these brands?
No. So it's hundreds of different influencers. I know the industry-wise, people are trying to get away from this stoner image and stoner influencers. But I mean, those are the people who are the heaviest consumers. They're not the people who walk into a dispensary and buy a pack of pre-rolls, every 2 weeks. These are the people who walk in and spend hundreds of dollars every single week. They're the blood of the industry. They're the main consumers. And I, at least from when we talk to dispensaries, those are the types of consumers that they're looking for. So a lot of our consumers are aimed, have an audience of these regular, daily, multiple times a day consumers. But we feel that those are the highest value consumers for these businesses. So it's a bit counterintuitive to the
I was just about to say that seems a little bit the other way.
I mean, it's also true. And at the end of the, yeah. At the end of the day, it's about making money and delivering consumers to our clients that are the heaviest consumers that spend the most money, spend it on a regular basis and are consistent. So that's that remains one of our main focuses.
Very nice.
Cool. I just have one quick question. I mean, obviously, you know, we live in a different time now, right? Social equity is very important, and representation is very important. So Herbfluence and their sort of cadre, if you will, of influencers, what is it like taking that on? Is it important to you and certainly to the companies you're working with that representation is a factor across the board in those influencers and who they are and what potential consumers will see them?
Yeah, it's a very diverse set of influencers, much more diverse than the representation of cannabis executives or in the space.
Shots fired, so, but well noted. Well noted, man.
So I didn't mean that in an offensive way, but
no,
I
all good.
I really view this as an important responsibility, because this is a way, it's kind of the microphone that brands will have to reach consumers. So we want to make sure it's done in a right way. We want to be responsible with our messaging. We want to make sure all applicable regulations and policies are followed. But at the same time, we want to make sure that these brands see results. So working with the influencers is definitely a little difficult. Some of these people do like to consume heavily all day, every day. So it is, there's a component of work, just working with people. But I mean, I guess that's a standard problem. Anytime that you have a large group of people that you're working with, inevitably there are going to be quirks, I guess you can say, with particular people. So, you know, I'm really excited to take it on. And, you know, I've been working on this company for 8 years now. I invested my life savings to start it and get it off the ground. And, you know, back in 2018, 2019, most of the people wrote us off as dead. I think there were 5-6 articles, including one in the New York Post that said Massroots was dead, and everyone was reaching out. All my friends were saying, "I'm so sorry, Isaac, that didn't work out." But it was just speculation. There was no truth to it. So it's, we're still around. We're still here. We've survived, and we've learned from everything. And in fact, I think we're kind of 3 to 4 years ahead of some of these other companies in terms of we've been through the phase of raising a bunch of money, expanding too fast, and then having to retrace a little bit, get back to the fundamentals, get back to a solid foundation, and then rebuild. And that process makes our business stronger. It makes us much more experienced, and I think will make us a much stronger play on the industry going forward, because we've already gone through kind of multiple cycles. Everything in the cannabis industry is accelerated and compressed. So it's really been kind of a lifetime worth of experiences compressed into 8 years.
Yeah, well, what's the old adage? It's if you work a year in the cannabis industry, it's really a decade, right? So
yeah,
I get that wholeheartedly.
I have two kind of points to, I guess, bring us to a close here. First off, Jeff Cavalieri in the chat loves Massroots. So, awesome. Yeah. So shout out to Jeff. Secondly, you all have a huge social following, absolutely giant. You know, I guess just to wrap us up here, can you tell our audience, why is that valuable in the cannabis industry specifically? I mean, how can you use that to further your company, further your business, and that type of support and visibility that you already have internally? Why is that valuable?
Well, we have an authentic brand and we speak the truth. And, you know, when the App Store kicked out our app back in 2015, our audience and our following just started sending emails to Apple, tens of thousands of emails. And Apple quickly reversed course just because they realized how passionate our followers are. And, you know, we've gotten several offers to kind of sell out our brand, if you will, to some of these large companies. But that's not how we want to monetize our audience. We don't want to sell out our voice in order to survive, or not to survive, but in order to make money. We want to monetize our platform the right way. And that's by continuing to deliver authentic content, speak the truth, and build up an audience of brands and clients that feel the same way.
I love that, Isaac. That was great. Awesome. Isaac, if anybody would like to reach out to you, if anybody has any questions about investing in the company, where can they look?
Isaac at massroots.com or ir.massroots.com.
Perfect. This has been a pleasure, my friend. Really appreciate you being on here and kind of walking us through the last few years, but seems like you're off and running now. So congrats to you guys, and looking forward to keeping an eye on you as we go forward.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Isaac. Take care, Isaac.
All right. That was Massroots MSRT on the OTC. Cool conversation.
What are you, a rapper now? What was that?
On the OTC.
What is going on here?
Your little brother's got some talents, got some skills.
Oh, God help us.
I know. All right. Y'all, drop a one in the chat if you were happy to hear from Isaac. That you know, Massroots, like, they're big. Like, they have a huge following. And I think they're an underdog.
Well, listen, you know, I said this at our last conference, and Isaac gave a presentation there. It's important to me at Benzinga in our stories, well, not our editorial stories, it's a different side of the house, but in the folks that we work with at our conferences and that we bring on these shows, it's okay if they've been through the shit, right? It's all right. You know, we like a good comeback story. We're based in Detroit. I mean, come on. We like comeback stories here at Benzinga. So we're all about the little guys. We're all about those folks looking for, you know, a second wave or the next wave of their careers and their companies. And we're all about giving them that platform. So, you know, props to Isaac. Well, he's trying to turn it around, and we're going to watch and see what happens.
Influencer marketing is not something to scoff at. To actually make a business out of that, I think is, you know, you haven't seen it much in the cannabis industry, at least not from my perspective. I mean, maybe what, like a High Times or somebody like that. But, you know, for Massroots to start monetizing that, especially when they have a large social following themselves, seems like a win.
Yeah, no joke. I mean, yeah, you have to have built the infrastructure, which clearly he has and he's talked about. And then he could have easily have sold that infrastructure and that following, that giant list of folks, to someone else. But he chose to try to retain it and, you know, pick it back up off the mat and see what he could do. So, you know, more power to him.
Yeah. Again, MSRT. All right, Patrick. That was a fun first discussion. We have one more guest for you today. Massive brand in the space. Patrick, your turn. Who do we got?
Will do, my friend. So Anne-Marie Dachshund, I hope I pronounced that correctly, the CMO of Dosist, a company everyone in this industry should know. And what's happening, Anne-Marie?
Hi, guys. How are you today?
Awesome. How are you? How did I do on the name? Was it okay?
You know what? You absolutely nailed it. I'm very impressed. Yeah, just nailed it. Nailed it.
Sometimes it's just the confidence. It's just like, you know what? I'm going to say it.
You know what? Own it. Just own it.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Are you traveling?
Where are you?
Yeah.
This looks cool.
Oh, well, I'm in beautiful Santa Monica Canyon in sort of the driveway office, which is a 1979 Westphalia van. You know, so it's like when you're getting away from the home office, it's just a few steps to the driveway office, and you kind of, you know, it's a little vibey, kind of, you know, feels good.
I'm all about that. Please drive it to Michigan immediately.
Yes. I'm a road trip. I'm going to come see you guys.
Yes.
I feel like that's the start of an influencer page within itself. Anne Marie's van, we'll call it.
There we go.
Anne Marie, tell us about you. Tell us about your journey to cannabis. I mean, my goodness.
I have the privilege of being the chief marketing officer of Dosist, as Patrick so eloquently put it. And came here by way of, you know, that natural jump from snowboards. So, you know, like the classic snowboard to cannabis story. You've heard it all before. You know what? The quick story was, I was at the 2018 Winter Olympics in Korea, and I got a phone call from the folks at Dosist, and I was sort of like thinking, like, what? Like, here I am, we're on top of the world, and our athletes are here, and we designed the uniforms, and, you know, what could be better than this? And then, you know, fast forward to, you know, getting home from that, I ended up flying to see them, like, you know, because I was very intrigued coming from a hard goods background with their product platform, quite frankly, and realized, like, wow, they're bringing, like, real device technology technology to the space, the innovation. I mean, you know, our founder and chairman, Jason DeLand, and the team that he had, that kind of founding team. I mean, just we're so ahead of it of, hey, why is it if marijuana is such an amazing resource for wellness, like why isn't it just widely adopted? And, you know, the fact that they took on really the two biggest challenges, right? Number one was dose control. Like, you know, yes, maybe you smoke a joint, you might feel better. The next day you smoke a joint and you're just like, you know, now I'm on Mars for 2 days. And, you know, just there was no, that sense of like how much to take and then what do you want to feel when you take it? So the fact that they figured out a device that could, you know, meter the dose and then figure out targeted formulas that they could repeat consistently. And so the fact that they took on kind of the two sort of steepest hills and then did it via, you know, beautiful brand device design. I mean, it was like a lean in opportunity. And, you know, weirdly, it reminded me a little bit of getting back on the ride of growing up at Burton Snowboards, because snowboarding at the beginning was illegal. Like most mountains didn't, like said, you know, stay away, like don't disrupt our very happy traditional ski business. And so not only did Burton have to create a brand and commercialized product, they also had to create the access to the sport. So in a weird way, you know, I was sort of groomed by Jake Burton of that sense of you have to put education first. You have to put the experience first
before you
hand someone something to slide down the hill in or before. And so I, you know, that idea of education first before you bring out the product, it really reminded me of it, of Dosis, because same idea. People say, oh, this is a beautiful device. What is that? It's so elegant. And you say, well, you know, it's actually a cannabis pen. And they, ooh, yeah, haven't done that since college. You're like, no, let's talk about it first. Like, let me tell you why this is can be part of your wellness routine and whatnot. And so it had a lot of similarities in that way. But yeah, I think it was like an opportunity to get back into a moment of a big new category, disrupting it, help shape it, be a part of it. And, you know, here I am, a Northeast girl that finds myself in Santa Monica.
Well, so that's a perfect segue. Thank you. And when it comes to, you know, who we are in the cannabis space, and I say we because collectively we as an industry, we've learned how to do things a bit differently to get by for so many years, right? So this next question, I think, pertains specifically to what you said about education first, but I'll let you answer it. For some of our viewers who are not actively working in cannabis branding or social media marketing, you know, how is what you do different than sort of the traditional method of getting a narrative out there?
Because it's doing it within a regulated cannabis space?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a good question. I get asked this a lot, especially at the beginning. It was like, so what are you going to do? Oof, how are you going to handle this? And so I thought, well, geez, you know. So honestly, my sort of take on it and working with an amazing team was kind of to think the opposite. Well, let's not think about how we have to narrow marketing to within, you know, these sort of set boundaries. Let's think about how we could actually pioneer and do traditional marketing using cannabis platforms. So guess what that took? Education. So it was kind of the same idea was, well, hey, we showed up, a couple examples, showed up at the Toronto Film Festival. I'm Canadian, I'm Toronto, so you always got to drop a Canadian term when you can. So shout out Toronto. But showed up at the Toronto Film Festival before cannabis had been legalized there with a 5,000 square foot outdoor activation, like yards from the center of the film festival, but with an education platform. Obviously no live product, no trial, like, I mean, our leadership was like, well, are you serious with this? Like what, you know, and I was like, listen, just getting in front of people, having them have a nice conversation. So we brought wellness guides. We just had people come in and say, ask us anything. What do you want to know about cannabis? What are you afraid of? And we also had a call to action for them to lobby their, you know, MPs and whatnot, because, you know, they were really trying to force more for the devices to come in because only flower was coming at that time. So things like that, where you think, wow, you know, you have like the car companies and the, you know, the liquor companies, and then you have, you know, this little dosist, you know, they're showing up. We did the same thing at something like Art Basel. We were one of the first brands, early brands, you know, this is now a number of years ago, that did out of home, you know, in Los Angeles, Sunset Strip. Now it's very common to see cannabis on billboards and whatnot. But the idea was, well, who do we need to speak to? Obviously you have to do it compliantly, but you know, Condé Nast, you know, such a traditional magazine group, again, go in there. Let's tell you, we're not coming in with some recreation. Let's get, you know, let's like, you know, get crazy. This is a wellness product. Your reader is our consumer. And for me, the whole point was, we're only going to normalize this when we can speak to it where people feel comfortable, where they're already getting their information. So that's what my whole point was. How do we get traditional? And that in itself becomes disruptive because cannabis was sort of, you know, locked out. How do we get into traditional places and find our consumer where they are? And that served us very well because we have this longer story to tell that this is for, you know, this is for health and wellness, and this isn't just sort of like a party aid, et cetera. So that was sort of our approach.
As a quick follow-up to that, and I think you all have done fantastic, so qualifying this, how do you feel the overall cannabis industry has done thus far? Because honestly, at this point last year, I would have said they could do a lot better. But I feel like there's been a step up in the past few months, but I'd love your opinion there.
You know, I think what's so interesting is where I saw it first was at the last pre-COVID Hall of Flowers, you know, the kind of really nice elevated trade show. And, you know, for a while, Dosist was kind of, you know, the only real brand with like, you know, the very beautiful packaging, very clean aesthetic, like a real packaging story and narration and sort of, you know, consumer discovery, et cetera. And I remember going to Hall of Flowers and going, okay, here it comes. So I guess my point is where I saw it in marketing happening first was with the product itself. Because at the beginning it was slap your name, like, oh, we're the Lanes and, you know, it's Lane Cannabis and, you know, get it in there. And
we should do that.
I tell you, you know, TM, check your email. And it's sort of like, hey, as long as it was physically in a compliant package, you were in business. And then the industry started catching up with doses and whatnot. And now you just see packaging being, you're seeing real players come in that really get it. So I feel like it has started with the presentation of the products themselves. And then now it's going, and then it's kind of getting into social where you're seeing some brands really kind of ramp that up. And, you know, and then, but really beyond that, I think there's still just so much opportunity. And I honestly think, again, we need to work more collectively to break down those barriers of access to traditional spaces to advertise in. Because yes, if you're a new movie or an Apple product, like, yeah, you can have your choice. But for cannabis, like you don't have access to that. So it is actually such a gateway for cannabis brands if you can get to a big point of impact and advertise, whatever you choose for your medium, you know, broadcast, print, out of home, you know, if you want to make sort of those big traditional moments. So I think it's going to take a little bit more collective effort, you know, to break those barriers. But I do think there's still a lot of work to do, because also it feels like the brands that do activate a lot tend to be kind of very similar, like a lot on the high rec, very, you know, music influenced. And that's an important category and has helped build this business. But I feel like that there's kind of that chunk where they're kind of always throwing things and sponsoring things and very involved in music and kind of out there. And then there's kind of feels like a bit of a void. And then, you know, you kind of have someone like a Dosist over here that's kind of creating more of this wellness space and education and bringing in a newer consumer and, you know, and sort of changing the stigmas. And so it feels like there's just a lot of runway we still need to cover so that, you know, we have the same access as every other vertical or category out there to go after and inform consumers. I mean, we're not coming at them with this horrible, illegal, illicit message. We're saying, hey, would you like to sleep better tonight? Like, it's like, oh, what? You know, stay away, you evil people.
I love that. You know what's, and you kind of answered this, but I'm going to double back to it a second. And I'd love to, for you maybe to tell us what markets Dosist is actually in, because it seems like you guys are everywhere, right? But if you still feel like there's runway to cover, right? And obviously that has to inform what your strategies are. You talked about Art Basel. You talked about the billboards in LA. You talked about a number of different ways you're reaching people in some of these very different markets, right? And you referenced obviously some other brands and how they like to be tied to music and festivals and all kinds of things. And you guys are focused on wellness. So I mean, how do the markets you're in inform your strategies? And maybe just remind us what those are.
Yeah. So just to start, the markets that we're in right now is, we're proud to be a California brand based in Los Angeles, and California really is our core, our core big business. We're also in the state of Nevada, and also we're in the entire country of Canada. So there we go. Second call out to Canada. That was an incredible accomplishment, just because, just opening, sort of the whole country at once. And Canada, to their credit, took a very measured and controlled approach, right? And also as the first G7 country to, nationalize or nationally legalize, they wanted to do it right. And I think they set a good example, albeit it made for steep hills to get in. However, it allowed us, we just stayed on it. And then that gave us our first country. So I love what you said, Patrick, you're a man after my own heart, that we sort of show up bigger than where we're actually distributed a little bit. But that was really by design. I can remember at the beginning when I started, when I started doing my initial audit, okay, what is Dosist doing well? What have they done well? And what they had done such a good job of was very intimate, high touch education moments. So get 20 people in a room, educate them about cannabis, educate them about the products, and then maybe do a yoga class, just make it all full circle. So it was very grassroots and it was highly effective. However, as I said, it might take a little while to build a global brand if we do it 20 people at a time. So it might be time to maybe show up like the brand we want to be, and start staking those claims before others do. So we were, like I said, going to Toronto, it was like, what's Dosist? Who are these guys? But lo and behold, through the 8 days of film festival, we had 10,000 people come through our activation. Wow. Where we individually educated them, from the easiest questions of, is it really legal, to, oh my gosh, what should I do for chronic arthritis? And changed kind of hearts and minds. So when Dosist arrived, we had sort of already had already been there and already activating, or like I said, showing up at an Art Basel where our consumers are going for culture and lifestyle, and being there, it made them think, wow, this is a brand that feels like it's got a beautiful presence and it feels kind of trusted, and they're moving with conviction and confidence. And seeing 500 people under the white tent of a takeover at Soho House, all just there sort of like doing Dosist, if you will, meaning like getting educated, drinking Dosist inspired mocktails, keeping it very vibey, very wellnessy, it started to make an indelible link to the brand that you are talking about, which is, feels like we've already gone bigger and have a wider footprint. And I think that has, and not I think, I know that has served us so well, of kind of the brand being in front of the distribution. Because now, if we think about, say, New York, right? Shout out New York State. So say in a year, right, we can show up in New York City. We've already kind of been there. Like we've already gone there. We've done things there, and so that for us has been a big play. Is, of course, we support the markets we're in, but also where we can, sort of get in front of some key moments to, just start socializing and amplifying the brand on a wider scale.
That is so cool. It seems like such an obvious, but you're the first person I've actually heard do something like that. That's really cool. So talk to, we actually, right before you, we talked to Isaac Dietrich, the CEO of Mass Roots. My last question to him was about the value of social media. Can, you know, you being in marketing, I imagine, you know, you could talk to me all day about the value and horridness and wonders of social media, but talk about how it's been effective for Dosist for me.
You know, social is just the word, right? It's like what we all live in it, right? Personally and brands, you know, so professionally and personally. What I will say is we decided early that it would be a key lead for us. So that has been critical. Like it has been a big part of our growth because, you know, we started to build a community early. I think for us, our strategy has been about consistency on social. Like if you look at our pages, it's pretty clear, like it's consistent. We have a very, very clean aesthetic tone, and look by design, you know, and it really is product forward. So we had decided we wouldn't be kind of, let's kind of be all over the place or just talk about what we did last night or, just do activations or, you know, just different stories. We decided we would make it our real product forum and just keep putting out product and messaging so that, again, you start to make that link to consumers of, I recognize that product. I've been educated at as much as I can at the social level so that when they walk into a dispensary or they're online for a delivery service, they sort of have that like, we've just layered it so much like, yeah, that's Dosist. Like, so for us, the consistency and being product led has been key because for us, we do have that extra narrative of education and specific formulas that target a specific benefit. And we do bring a newer consumer in some cases, that maybe have taken a break from cannabis or frankly have never tried it. So that's what we've done. What I will say is moving forward, one thing that myself and the team want to do is we want to start bringing more humanity to our page. Cause now I feel like, okay, we've set the stage on, this is Dosist, yes, dose control, targeted formulas. But now we've got these great products coming out. And now I think it's like, yeah, we get that Dosist loves Dosist, but maybe we should hear from, you know, this person that is using Dosist and get just more of that testimonial. So it's not that it's rocket science, it's just that as part of our strategy, it hasn't really been in play yet. But I feel like now's the time coming on the other side of the pandemic where I want to hear how and why people use Dosist. And then I feel like then the consumer kind of sees themselves in that, like, you know, oh, here's Emma and she's a busy executive with two kids and she's been on the go and she uses our calm pen because it helps smooth out her day. Like, I think the consumer wants to hear that from Emma and not me again, just saying, hey, you know, the calm pen's the best. That's something I would like Dosist. And I think, you know, we're excited about that to start bringing in just a little bit more of that, user experience, user testimonials, or even just great imagery of, you know, people enjoying or conveying the benefit of the product. So, you know, that those are some of the things we're thinking about for social.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I was just about to ask you what seems to be driving the most growth on social for you. And maybe it's that human element in terms of what you're adding next that you feel like is going to be the biggest driver. But I'd be interested to learn that. And also just which platform it is most beneficial for you right now. Is it Instagram? I don't know which ones you can use and can't. Twitter, Facebook, any of that. So
yeah, we're on.
Let us know.
Yeah, we're on all three, but we're Instagram led. We saw more conversation on Twitter just, even before Reddit became, you know, even that much more of the, you know, the full just, you know, conversational forums. We saw a lot of that happening on Twitter as it related to cannabis, where people are just telling each other what's up. And so we were a little more active on Twitter at the beginning, but now it's an Instagram game like most for us. And what I'm seeing and what we're seeing as far as driving, it's never perfect science, right? Like some of it's just awareness, et cetera. But a couple of key things for us have been starting to, you know, integrate retailers. So we do things like retailer spotlight. So pick retailers, say that have one of our new products, which we'll chat about hopefully in a minute, and just say, hey, available at, like just starting to take the guesswork even out of the, for the consumer of, oh, great. Love those guys. They're not far from me. I'll go. So, and then actually doing co-marketing with the retailers and investing in their social platforms. Because I think this whole idea of co-op marketing is really where it's going to be going more. And guess what? All, you know, like they should, dispensaries and delivery platforms are all monetizing their real estate, their digital real estate, and their physical real estate. And, you know, that's the game. So starting, I think you all, as a brand, you also have to invest in them. Like, hey, okay, we will invest in a post or a text or an email with you, because we're partners in this and we both want to win. So I think that's also been another strategy of thinking about not just our own channels, but partnering up with the retailers and seeing what we can do on theirs as well. So that's newer days for us, but those are kind of the strategies we're building out.
I love that. Again, I've said that three times now. So Anne-Marie, we have a few minutes here. Can you give us a sense of what's next for Dosis? What should we all be looking for and expecting?
Yes, I would love that. So we're at a very exciting kind of crux right now. We spent the last year, like everybody, okay, what are we going to invest in? And what we decided was we were going to keep the gas on our innovation, you know, whereas others said, oh, you know, I need to slow that down, or, you know, slow down supply chain costs, or et cetera, et cetera. We decided that we would make the tweaks we needed so we could stay focused on product. I mean, we're product innovation for a company. So we spent a year coming up with a lot of new product platforms, and, you know, three very exciting ones. First one is live resin. So we had never done live resin before. And just before that, we created our first rechargeable. So The thing about Dosis is people always said, yeah, you know, disposable is a great product, but it is disposable. You know, that's not perfect. Some people love it for the convenience, but we need to be thinking more sustainable. So we created a dose controller battery and dose pods. So we did them in our core formulas, but we started to realize that our consumer was starting to want a little more potency from us. They love that we're, you know, lower dose, and they love that, you know, we're lighter formulas, but they love our technology. So what we decided was, well, okay, we saw a trend coming in live resin. We said, well, listen, let's not pretend to be the experts in live resin, but what we are the experts in dose pen technology. So let's go out and partner with two key live resin producers. One is Bear Extraction House out of Humboldt County, who are just an incredible operation, OG, humble, proud, incredible group. And the second, that's this one. So we did a pod with them with liquid live resin, and we've now done four strains with them with that. And then we've done two, and two more coming, with 710 Labs. And as if you guys know, 710 Labs, I mean, they have a cult following. They can't
they're big
with demand. Their CEO is a friend of mine, Brad Melshager, and we partnered up with them. And this was so exciting because this is more disruptive. This isn't just sort of Dosis being over here and talking about calm and sleep and relief, but Dosis also saying, hey, we also have a consumer that wants something that's a little more high potency. So what we also did was we took our pod and we evolved it beyond our core pod that we have right now to make sure it could handle live resin. Because the biggest thing about live resin, it's such a beautiful product, right? Because it's flash frozen and you get the purest experience of flavor, smell, taste, etc. But a lot of people put it in pens and they burn it because they just keep inhaling and the heat ramp goes up. So you're actually burning this beautiful, you know, material. So what we did is we put in temperature ramp in this, so specifically for live resin, so it keeps it at an even temp. So you're all, and of course we have dose control, so it shuts off after one dose. So it means you're always getting like the most purest like form of live resin. So,
oh, cool.
So that's really cool. So that's one big story. And the other big story that we just launched right now are gummies, which is a big new category that we're going after. So we've done Dosis gummies in five different formulas, including a live resin one. And that's a big bet for us. And those are just dropping right now.
Awesome. I love that move too. That is really cool. Are you doing those in-house, or are you partnering with somebody to do those?
Yeah, no, we're doing them kind of through our ecosystem. But yeah, so we've got great like flavor houses that help, you know, because for us, we wanted to make sure we were a leader in flavor. The great thing about our gummies is that we wanted to make sure they were 100% natural and vegan, because that was, we were starting to hear a lot, you know, you start to get into that, like, you know, gelatin deep dive and go, that's not, we don't want that kind of gummy. So they're vegan, all natural, and also really, really incredibly flavored. And the, all of them are 5 milligrams. So they're really nice, you know, nice mellow dosage, but we did another one with bear extract, and it's a 10 milligram gummy. So that's kind of for a little bit more of your little bit more of your enthusiast.
Perfect. Anne-Marie, I'm so sorry, but we have to wrap up.
I could sit here all day.
I know. Awesome. I'm learning so much from you. And honestly, I love picking your brain just on all things cannabis and marketing. So super interesting. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Where can our audience find you? Dosis.com. Can they follow you on Instagram? What's the handle there?
Yeah, just my A.M. Dacyshyn. A.M.D.A.C.Y.S.H.Y.N.
Perfect. We will post that in the chat. Thank you so much, Anne-Marie.
It's
much appreciated.
Thanks, Anne-Marie.
Definitely.
Okay. Soon, for sure.
Okay. Bye for
now.
Well,
Anne-Marie.
Take care.
Bye, everybody.
What a great show.
That was incredible. Real quick, I think I have a theme for today. Business versus bro.
Where are you getting that?
Business versus bro. We've had two conversations, or it could be something about social media, but we've had two conversations.
That would have been a natural
about,
way to take
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you know, but natural.
All right, give it a one in the chat if it's business versus bro, or two if it's social media. But we got to get out of the way. There's another show coming. Business versus bro.
Business versus bro. I didn't even have a chance to explain it. Anyway.
When your life depends on it, when everything is on the line, you've got to get real about addiction treatment. Only Karen offers 65 years of medical expertise in evidence-based treatment with real, proven results. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. So if you're ready for something real, visit caron.org/real today. Karen. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.
Jeep Freedom Days are here, where right now, well-qualified returning FCA lessees get a low-mileage lease on the 2022 Grand Cherokee WK Laredo E4x4 for $369 a month for 36 months with $3,799 due at signing. Tax, title, license extra. No security deposit required. Call 1-888-925-JEEP for details. Requires dealer contribution, a lease across their capital. Lessee is responsible for termination fees. Current lease must end by 7-3-23. Extra charge for miles over 30,000. Residency restrictions apply. Take delivery by 7-5-22. Jeep is a registered trademark.